you, Jay. Thank you, staff, for being here.
Martin, you need to give us instructions before whatever you can
do. It takes a village. All right. Thank you, Martin. Item number one, I ask for approval of the minutes from the March 4th, 2019 meeting.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes. Moving on to item number two, which is public comment. Is there anyone in the public who would like to comment on any of the agenda items for Fire Committee today? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next agenda item, number three, which is budget review for FY 2020. And Mr. DeMora, we'll turn this over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, good afternoon. I'll go ahead and provide highlights of the Fire Department budget being proposed for next year. And, of course, we're here to answer any questions that you have with regard to it. First, overall, we are requesting an increase of $420,000. It's about 3% in the new year budget as compared to this year. What is included in that amount are the being brought forward, the six firefighters that we have hired in this current fiscal year, and also the grant money, about $100,000 if we're successful at getting that grant that you're familiar with. That's included in this budget as well. Also, things that support them, uniforms, radios, all that is funded in the budget. In salaries and the other benefits, you'll notice the 4% on average increase being proposed for next year. There's also the 1% mandatory retirement included. Overtime appears, if this budget is passed, decreasing $112,000. That doesn't reflect a decrease in level of service. This line item, like others in other departments, was inflated purposely because of the what we had to do to deal with Hurricane Florence last September, whatever that was. So the number that appears now is what it was at the start of the last fiscal year. Other adjustments, you'll notice decreases in certain areas of the budget. Again, not a level of service decrease, but we've moved some items into capital. Equipment supplies is a good example of that, and some other general supplies and repairs also moved into capital. That's consistent with other budgets brought forward to you today. Let's see, other highlights, there are four replacement vehicles. One squad. The squad is the largest and most significant of those vehicles called for in this new year budget. Capital-wise, that is on page 146. I can just talk to it very briefly.
Eric, before you move on to that, just a quick question. And I should probably know this, but are firefighters in the standard retirement system or the PORS system?
PORS.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We do have some capital projects. The first is the replacement of fire station number 4, and we're adding more money to it in the proposed budget to supplement what has been bonded. When all is done, we are prepared to have $6.25 million to support that project. We have $150,000 added in the proposed budget for fire department, the traffic preemption devices. That'll be about $312. That'll be $312,000. That'll be fully funded. And the remaining most significant current project for the fire department is the police fire training facility. And we're moving forward as best we can, sort of piecing together improvements out there. But after that, I mentioned we've added some firefighters. And so we're increasing the level of service that way. And those are the highlights for the budget, and please answer any questions.
Do you have any contingencies, Mr. DeMora, in the budget for the fire? Any financial contingencies for overtime or for unforeseen circumstances, storms, whatever?
No, no, sir. We have a general contingency fund for the entire town that we can pull funds for in the event of an emergency.
It's big.
But otherwise, what you see is what we're anticipating for the new year.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Kinane.
With the hurricane response and firefighters staying over their shifts, was there anyone that was ordered to stay over that was not paid?
I doubt that. Seriously, do you recall that, Chief?
No. I mean, hourly employees are obviously paid at the hourly rate, and when they hit the overtime threshold, salary employees, that's just part of the job. I mean, they're exempt from that.
So exempt means battalion chiefs and above, or captains and above?
Battalion and above.
Okay. And so that means every minute that they were here, they were paid for?
Correct.
Okay. But there may have been a little bit of a lag to make that happen, right?
No, I mean, any hours that were worked were paid on the next check, and then we figure out the reimbursement and all that later as far as from FEMA or whoever that's from. But, yeah, everybody was paid, I mean, that next paycheck.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
Anything else?
Oh, yeah, I have another question.
Okay, go ahead.
Last year, I just feel I have to raise this every year, whether it gets support of council or not. Is there any way we can get, like, a hazardous duty pay or some kind of little bonus for the police and firefighters that are working around the clock in comparison to the rest of the town? I know I've been told it has to be across the board and everything else, but, you know, not to insult anyone that works in this building, but we see police and firefighter funerals all the time. The jobs are just more dangerous, and, you know, there are places around that do little extras for the people that are putting their lives on the line. Is that something we've ever looked at?
I can't recall, sir. I don't recall ever looking at it. I'd almost rather, if that was a desire of council, in my opinion, almost be best just to pay them more, you know, just straight line salary.
Just bump up those titles.
If you feel that, yeah, if you feel that that the nature of the job warrants additional wages, then straight pay it, because that way it would positively affect their retirement.
Right.
As well.
The last chief had mentioned he had a lot of trouble recruiting, and one of the reasons, when I talked about why didn't we grow the department, you know, one of the things he said was we couldn't get people. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. It sounds like you have more people applying than you have jobs currently. But I guess as we grow the size of the department, you'll see maybe an adjustment to that. So I just like to put it on the record that I think the people that are, you know, at risk of dying at their job should be treated differently than the rest of the town. And I know there's people who may not like me saying that, but that's okay.
Thank you. Mr. O'Rourke, anything, any questions, comments on the budget?
No. Looks good.
All right. Just one question, Chief. Now, we're talking about we've got six additional firefighters and potentially six more. Does this budget reflect all the associated costs with adding personnel, that much personnel in terms of equipment and supplies and training? All that's incorporated in here as well?
Yes, sir. We added extra line item in our uniforms if we need it for turnout gear and the daily uniforms and things of that nature. So we did take that into account.
Good. Okay. Well, looking for a motion here.
I'll make a motion that we approve the budget as presented.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion or questions? I'll go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of approval of the fire department operating expenditures and the capital and maintenance expenditures. Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion passes.
Thank you.
And I just want to give a shout out to Councilman Cunane. You brought these issues forward several months ago. We've had a lot of discussion on this, which makes today a whole lot easier. We don't have to sit here and battle the details. So, you know, thank you for raising those issues. And I think we're in a better place, a stronger place for our department next year. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think 5 years is a long time. So we're going to be operating on the crossed fingers method for 5 years till we get where we need to be.
Right.
And things could always happen, but even when you're with the proper staffing. So it's definitely a good thing. Thank you, sir, for letting us go down that path.
All right, so moving on to item number five, which is number four, which is an overview regarding emergency management projects, initiatives, and general operations. And Amanda, it seems like it's been forever since we've heard from you, but it's nice to see you again. So how about an update on what you've been doing and where we stand in terms of emergency preparedness?
Yes, sir. Good evening. It has been a while. November was the last time I was spent time in front of you, and out of that was the approval by council of our emergency operations plan. Thankfully, we did not have to activate and utilize that plan this winter, so there's a positive. I have five short slides for you, including this one, so that one was quick. We have the Cooper River Bridge Run coming up this weekend. I have been planning in tandem with the City of Charleston Emergency Manager since November to help facilitate the overall operational planning of security and response measures, and have met numerous times. I feel very comfortable in the work that we've done, and it has been quite a bit of work. It's been one of my priorities over the past quarter. So as of the 19th of this month, we had 31,000 runners registered. It caps off at 38,000. We have several events over the course of the entire weekend. Just a quick note, we have over 22 organizations working together to include federal, state, local, county, and then, of course, private and nonprofit organizations coming together just on the security and emergency response planning side of things, not to mention the actual logistical operation of the bridge run. So there's a lot of weight that goes into it, and I'm looking forward to a safe and enjoyable bridge run. I hope that everyone that comes to the start line will enjoy themselves as well.
So by a show of hands, how many of you healthy-looking people are running in the race or walking? Excellent.
You guys running?
You guys?
Sitting in the stands. I'll see y'all.
Right. We'll be watching.
That's what I'll be doing.
We're looking forward to a successful event. So thank you for your work on that. I know it's the amount of planning that goes into that all year round is just incredible.
It's incredible. So next up, we have a lot of work going on with what has been formed by our essential key stakeholder departments. Emergency management planning team has representatives from each one of those, and we are building out the rest of the emergency management program, and we'll implement and continue to build over the years. But as of right now, we have quite a bit on our docket. So these are plans and efforts that are that we'll be working through just as quickly as we can work through all of them. A lot of these are as complex as the emergency operations plan. So hazard identification, threat assessment, that's for all types of hazards, including man-made and natural, training and exercise, just like we had last year with the June exercise. It's really the best way for us to take a look at what our capabilities are and improvement areas are, continuity of emergency operations, just making sure that during catastrophe we can still continue to have those critical services. Continuity of government is a little bit further beyond just emergency and catastrophe scenarios. Hazard mitigation and preparedness. We live hazard mitigation and preparedness, but this would put more construct around it and be based off of the hazard identification threat assessment. Recovery, clearly once something comes in and hurts you pretty bad, you've got to figure out a way to recover. And then community outreach, just making sure that we are approaching the emergency management program from a whole community standpoint to include our businesses and our citizens. One thing that is really interesting that I wanted to touch on that I'm excited about is working with neighborhoods across the community, HOAs and POAs, to kind of build what would be an association of associations in which we can all come together and talk about best practices in neighborhood planning down to the individual household, and even go as far as training neighborhoods and individual households on community emergency response teams. So we're really excited to get that off of the ground and start reaching further into the community.
Yeah, I would say on that point, too, and you've got subdivision developments like Park West that have thousands of homes. Your emergency plans there are like a small town.
They're incredible.
Or a mid-sized town. So, you know, Park West, I know, now has a resident board that's operating. The developer's gone. Carolina Park will eventually be there. So you can really impact a lot of households just by staying in touch with those boards. So that's an excellent approach.
Thank you. finally, we are ramping up for our June full-scale emergency operations center exercise. This year, the scenario is going to be catastrophic flooding associated with a slow-moving hurricane that comes south of us, which puts us in the front right quadrant and results in significant, somewhat long-lasting storm surge in addition to heavy rainfall. So we'll put quite a bit of water and flooding over the town and look at really more of the response in the days that are after the flooding. So we're looking at starting the exercise after landfall and moving, and that puts us in a position to be able to move into short-term recovery in the exercise as well. So something similar to what we've seen in Nebraska, Houston, and, of course, in our own state in North Carolina last year. And that's it. That's all for me.
Questions or comments for Amanda?
I think, as usual, you've done a great job. Very thorough presentation. We appreciate that. And, looking for greater things in the future from you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Amanda, I would just say, too, from a budget perspective, I understood correctly, there is money in the budget this year for the generator, for the other half of this building, which is critical. This building has to be able to be functional during an event, and I'm sure that was a sizable expenditure, but I'm happy to see that y'all have made that happen because I think, you know, we don't want to find out we need that when it's too late. So that'll be something in the next year that'll be purchased and put in place if the budget.
I think we're hoping to get some grant money.
Yes, sir. So we've applied for a hazard mitigation grant, and this will be cover our match if we receive the grant, which we're very hopeful for.
So let me understand this. This is like a split system. And so it operates on one half currently, and we're looking to operate the other half shortly?
Well, the one that we have can power the police department and some other areas. But this other one will come in, which will replace that one and can power the entire building.
Oh, good, good. I was about to say, what are we doing? We're not going to split this out.
Yeah, right.
Is this a natural gas or diesel, or what is it?
So it'll be diesel.
Diesel.
And right now, what our current plan, we have a capability to have generator capacity for the entire building. That being said, we have to rent a generator in the case of a hazard that gives us notice. Yep. In the case of a hazard that does not give us notice, such as an earthquake or a tornado, we would be fighting for that resource against everyone else.
Do you have somebody on call?
Yes, sir.
But also, I think we're also looking at just long-term recovery as well. I mean, if it's a major event, this people might be here for a long, long time. So it's good to have something in-house, not have to rely on outside sources. Yeah, sir.
Do all the real critical spots, like fire stations, already have generators? Is there any of them that are missing them? Okay. Because I know a lot of people think town hall's critical, but I can assure you the fire stations are more critical. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Amanda. Great. All right. So now we're moving on to item number 5 on the agenda, which is consideration of resolution to support House Bill 4147, commonly known as the Firefighter Cancer Bill. And so Mr. Cunane asked for this on the agenda, so I'll open up, let you introduce it. And then.
These have been going on for about 20 years across the whole country. There's about 6 or 7 states that currently do not have a presumption that cancers in firefighters have occurred in the line of duty. So, in other words, some of my information is old, so it might have changed number-wise, but at one time there was 13 cancers that were proven to be occurring in firefighters, tremendously more than in the general population. So it was decided that those 13 cancers would be, if a firefighter came up with that cancer, that it would be presumed to have happened in the line of duty. And what that does is it avails workers' comp and other things that any other workplace injury would would have, and it takes a worry off the shoulders of the firefighter and their family to have the presumption, because they don't have to fight to prove that it was work-related. So South Carolina is one of the six or seven states that have nothing, and this bill looks good this year, like it could happen. Of course, there's forces of evil out there that don't want to do it, but it looks pretty good in Columbia, and I would just urge everyone to adopt just a simple resolution saying we support our firefighters and their families, especially when they need us the most.
It's a federal bill.
Chief, I'd like to open up.
No, this is State House.
Chief, any thoughts on this?
Yes, sir. I have three quick slides. So just to kind of second what Mr. Cunane said, the number one line of duty death right now is cancer. 61% of all career firefighter line of duty deaths are the result of cancer. A 9% higher risk rate of obtaining cancer and a 14% higher risk rate of dying. And a few of the cancers that he talked about, there's a list, but, you know, for mesothelioma, for example, a 2 times greater risk represents 100% greater risk in the general population for a firefighter. So that's just a few of the cancers that are covered in the bill. Stuff that we've done internally to try to kind of combat this a little bit, we have a hood swap program. So research is showing the neck, the face, the hands, that's where your absorption rates are higher. So for the hoods that we wear, we take those off after every fire, and they get a fresh hood, and then we wash all that. Face and hand wipes have become big to try to get all those carcinogens off once you come out. So we're buying those now. Two sets of firefighting gear, so that dirty set can be washed and they have a fresh set to go back on the truck with. Post-fire decontamination, where we basically take Dawn dish soap, wash off the big particulates and kind of get that off the gear before it gets sent to be washed. And then our new SBAs that we got the grant for this year come with washable straps and just things that we can take apart to try to keep the cab of the truck cleaner. So we're doing some things internally. And then the bill itself just adds cancer coverage under workers' compensation. The firefighter must be actively employed for 10 years. And then it presumes that death from cancer was job-related unless it's rebutted by other evidence, maybe. And it hadn't been defined yet, but a lot of states use smoking as an example, so that's something that presumes that you didn't get that job-related wise. Okay. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Thank you, sir. Questions or comments?
Do we need to send this to council for adoption, this resolution?
I think if it's coming from town council, we'd have to do that.
Well, I'd like to make a motion to forward this to town council to consider this resolution and adopt it accordingly.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. I do have a couple of comments on this. And again, I absolutely support the spirit of this bill. But I want to make sure, and I've gotten some information about this already, just in terms of any financial impact this would have on the town. Because when you start adding things like cancer to workman's comp, that could impact the amount of money the town is liable for and payouts. And I want to make sure that we all understand, if there is an impact financially, what that will be. So I did get some information. And, Dan, I don't know if you want to maybe talk to us a little bit about what you know about liability or impact on workman's comp. Just so we're not surprised by something that could shock us.
So the difference in having as a presumptive injury under workers' compensation is that the firefighter, instead of it being covered under the health plan, the firefighter would be due lost wages during the time period for which they would be seeking treatment. Or permanently disabled, that can be to a maximum of 500 weeks of wages, 10 years approximately. Likewise, if they have a permanent partial or total disability from the injury, whether it's scarring or a loss of a body part or loss of function of a body part, that would go into the workers' compensation calculation for the state, and that injured firefighter would be entitled to a disability award that is based on a certain number of weeks of wages that they have. So even though it's like the town pays anyway, if it's with the health insurance or workers' compensation, there are some additional costs associated with it being under workers' compensation, some statutory benefits that the firefighter would be entitled to. In addition, that firefighter would be entitled to lifetime care, as that would would reduce that his period of disability as determined by an authorized medical physician. So that would be ongoing care that the town would cover for life.
Okay. Any questions about that?
No.
Good. Thank you for that information. And
certainly.
I always want to make sure that we think about that before we take on additional liability. But again, I think, you know, the town is, I think, has a reputation for caring for its employees and making sure that if you guys are serving us, that we take care of you guys as well. And so I absolutely would support this. And we've got a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
I just note that when you once you have something like this in place, they'll get the firefighters into the workers' comp quicker. That's just my experience in other places where it sounds like a lot, but once we know that, look, this is a career-ending injury and there's a safety net of going to workers' comp, they'll be going quicker across the board. It happens in other places, so I'm assuming that would happen here as well.
Yeah, and just one other question, too. Part of the bill has to do with if there is not a physical done when the person is hired, then it is presumed that things were fine when they were hired. Do all of our firefighters get a physical upon being hired here, so we have that information?
They do. I don't know if I'd have to look into if the physical that we provide or require meets the requirements.
That may be something just to look at in terms of if this thing moves forward. Yes, sir.
The gist behind that was that the I was involved in passing this somewhere else 20 years ago. Is the if there's a blood test when you come on, and it's hireable, there's a presumption that you were healthy to be hired. Nobody's hiring a firefighter who has blood results showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So that gives you showing cancer. So that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So